This is Philip McKee, speaking for the Army Air Force. Last Thursday night on this program, we interviewed Captain James R. Smith, who told us the story of the air war in the Southwest Pacific, beginning with the Japanese attack on the Philippines and including some of the recent American and Australian fighting in New Guinea, which resulted in the taking of the Japanese beachheads at Gona and Buna. Tonight we are going to present a close friend of Captain Smith, a man who was with him in cadet flying classes at Randolph and Kelly Field, and who is also giving the benefit of his air combat experience to the laboratories and test flying activities at Wright Field. And so the next voice you hear will be that of Captain Robert C. Ruig, who will begin by telling us something of his life in and out of the service before the beginning of the war.
Well, I was born at Gresham, Oregon on January the 5th, 1914. That means I was a little young for the last war, and of course I'm almost too old for this one.
Too old at 28? Don't pull that stuff here, Captain Ruig. This is a serious program, a program with a purpose. Too old at 28.
No kidding. I'm getting to be an old, old man when it comes to flying an airplane. What they want these days is young guys, kids around 20. You see, when it comes to coordination, quick reactions, and split-second decisions...
Just a minute, Captain. You're test flying at Wright Field, aren't you?
Sure.
And flying everything they have, aren't you?
Well, everything they've given me so far, but you see, I'm...
I know. You're an old, old man, so all they'll let you do now is fly new types of planes that are faster and harder to handle than anything we have in combat now. But let's get back to the dim and distant days of your youth. Tell us some of the things you did as a mere boy.
Well, our family moved to Nampa, Idaho when I was about 4 years old. And I went to the public schools there and then worked my way through Oregon State College. I studied forestry, working in the U.S. Forest Service during the summer vacations. That spread my college education out over 5 years, from 1934 to 39, because there were some bad forest fires in the fall of 37, and that kept me out of school until after Christmas. I got an ROTC commission in artillery at college, but in 1939 I decided to go into the Air Corps. I had 3 months of primary training at Glendale, California, and then 3 at Randolph and 3 at Kelly. I got my wings in May 1940 and was assigned to the 16th Light Bombardment Squadron at Barksdale Field. I was there for 6 months and then at the Savannah Air Base for a year. And there we worked some maneuvers with ground troops, but I put in a lot of my time ferrying A-20 attack bombers from the west coast to the east. That's the plane the British call the Boston, or the Havoc, or the Intruder, depending on whether it's equipped for day or night fighting over England or the continent. In November 1941, our bombardment group, the 27th, left San Francisco for the Philippines. That's the trip Captain Smith told you about, luxury liner to Manila, getting there 3 weeks before Pearl Harbor, having our dive bombers diverted by cargo ship to Australia after the war started, not getting to use them in the Philippines at all, and then being ferried down to Australian B-18s and so forth.
When did you get to Australia?
On Christmas Eve. Gee, that's almost exactly a year ago tonight. And to think of all that's happened in that time. I mean, how much we've improved our whole air situation in the Southwest Pacific. It was really tough then. We had hardly any planes, and the Japs had all they could use. None of us knew whether we'd be able to keep them out of Australia or not. But anyway, I went to work at Brisbane as an engineering officer, supervising the assembly of our 52 Douglas A-24 dive bombers.
By the way, Captain, I think a lot of us here in America never understood that job. We had the idea that a lot of our planes were getting out to Australia, but that it was taking forever to get them into the air. How about that?
I know. A lot of people think that all you have to do is hoist the plane off the ship, pour in the gas, and take off. But it isn't that simple. When planes are crated and shipped, it's a real job to assemble them, equip them, tune them up, test them, and then get them into actual combat. I had good crews of mechanics working day and night, but it took us about 6 weeks to assemble those dive bombers. It's different now. In most cases, we can fly them to the fighting fronts instead of shipping them. That saves weeks of shipping time and delivers them practically ready to fight. Why, even our fighter planes today are flying distances that would have been long for some of our bombers a year or two ago. All that is a result of research and development work here at Wright Field.
I see. Well, what did you do after you got the dive bombers assembled?
Our squadron flew up from Brisbane to Darwin. We just missed the big Japanese air raid at Darwin on February the 19th, when they came over with 126 heavy bombers, 18 dive bombers, and 36 Zeros.
Oh, yes. Major Hewitt Wheelis told us about that raid. He was air operations officer at Darwin at the time. Said all we had there was 10 P-40s, but that they went up against the Japs just the same.
That's right. We lost 9 out of the 10 P-40s, but 5 of the pilots got back okay. Well, after that, we stayed in the Darwin area for 5 weeks, dispersed at hidden airfields a little back from the coast. The Japs knew our squadron of dive bombers could have given any invasion fleet a terrific pasting, whether it had its own air protection or not.
Then you went to New Guinea, didn't you?
Yes, the Japs were already at Salamaua and Ley, and we knew they were going to make a try for Port Moresby. So our squadron went over there on March the 29th and celebrated our arrival by giving the Jap air base at Salamaua a good shellacking the next day. A week later, some more of our dive bombers joined us, and for the next 2 weeks, we really worked on those Jap airfields across the Owen Stanley Mountains. We fired the hangars, knocked out the AK-AK installations, plowed up the runways, and got 26 planes on the ground. Bombers, dive bombers, and Zeros.
Did your dive bombers have any fighter plane protection on those raids?
Oh, yes. That was really wonderful. There was an Australian fighter squadron with us at Port Moresby. They had P-40s, which couldn't get up too well to take the Jap bombers and Zeros at high altitude. But our dive bombers worked at only 10 to 15,000 feet. So when we'd go over to Pace Salamaua and Ley, the Aussies would go with us in their P-40s. And when the Jap Zeros came down to get at us, the Aussies were tearing to them like nobody's business. Those guys had the times of their lives whenever they went along with us.
The Japs raided Port Moresby too, didn't they?
Yes, they came over 23 times while we were there. But those Jap bombardiers are not as good as ours. In all those raids, we had no casualties and no serious damage to ground installations. A Jap bomber flying high would often miss our whole field. And if they came down low for better bombing accuracy, the Aussies would go up in their P-40s and knock them off. That sounds a little better than it really was, I know. We didn't knock down all of them every time, and of course we lost some planes. But on the whole, we had a big edge over the Japs in the air. Better planes and better pilots, even if the total Jap air strength was always greater than ours.
Captain, did you get a piece of the Coral Sea battle with your dive bombers?
No, that was a little too far away for us. Of course, that's why the Japs made so many raids on Port Moresby, to knock us out on the ground. When they found they couldn't do that, they sent their surface fleet into the Coral Sea, way east of New Guinea. Too far east for us. But it didn't do them any good. They took a beating just the same when they got down there.
Of course, the whole Coral Sea job, like all the Jap moves in that area, was intended to wind up with an invasion of Australia. What were the reactions of the Australian people to that prospect? Of the Australian people to that prospect?
Well, naturally, they were scared during those first few months. Who wouldn't be? Instead of sitting there and waiting for an invasion, they went to work for their lives. We don't know in this country what it is for a whole people to work day and night with the one purpose of winning a war. Everyone in Australia works. Everyone, and works all the time. I spent 3 months in southern Australia this summer and early fall, assembling more combat planes, and I got to see the Australians close, too. They're not kidding themselves that this is going to be an easy war. They know how tough it's going to be, and they're in it up to their necks every minute.
People say the Australians are more like Americans than like the English. Is that true?
Yes and no. They're British, all right, but they have an easier and more informal cordiality, like many Americans. I made a forced landing one day at a small town in central Australia, ranching country. The people there had never seen an American plane and were naturally very curious about it and wanted to know when we were going to have a lot of planes in their country. But the welcome they gave me at that club in their little town was just like I might have had in one of our western cow towns. Really warm, I mean. They're swell people.
Captain, our time is getting short.
Will you give us some idea of what you're doing now at Wright Field?
Well, of course, there's a lot I can't tell you, especially about some of the new types of planes. But I'm flying about all the current types to test the improvements and changes which are going into production lines right along. In the fighter class, I'm flying P-38s, 39s, 40s, 47s, and 51s. In the light bomber class, A-20s and 25s. The medium B-25s and 26s, and of course the heavy 17s and 24s. You see, in combat, you learn some intangible things about handling a plane that can't be learned any other way. And what I'm doing here is applying that knowledge to test flying. And I'm learning a lot of new stuff myself, too. Our current planes, the old and the present types, are improving constantly. And the new types, the secret stuff, are wonderful.
How wonderful?
I'd say that our new types of planes, the ones still to get into combat, are in all cases at least 50% better than the types they'll replace, and in some cases 100% better. The Axis boys don't know what's coming to them, and they won't like it at all when they get it either.
Thank you very much, Captain. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Captain Robert G. Ruig, of Portland, Oregon, of the Philippines, of Australia, of New Guinea, and now of the flight section at Wright Field.